Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Sheerhouse Weekly Highlights podcast with me, Georgie Courage-Cole. This week, I'm joined by Rosie Cherrington, Lou Huff, and Charlotte Collins. Let's start off talking about TV.
It's just a team one this week, so we can talk about TV.
My favourite subject. So what's anyone been watching? Lou, let's start with you.
Secret Life of 4-Year-Olds is back, which is one of my favourite series. I absolutely love it. I think it's so cute. It's so funny to just watch how they engage and how they're learning off each other and their emotional intelligence and their empathy for each other. I just think it's so cute.
It's fascinating. I watch it as well. I get completely engrossed by it. Because you see, people have these actual characteristics from like the day dot. Like, it's so bizarre, exactly as you say, how they react to each other. It's bizarre.
And you see how much they pick up from adults and what they've obviously like overheard like their mum or dad saying, things like that. It's so sweet. Like, this week's one, they were talking, everything was like, can you be my boyfriend? Will you be my girlfriend? Are you my best friend? And it was just so sweet. Yeah. I love it.
Oh, I need to watch it. Yeah. And actually, you're so right, they do. I hear things come out of Coco's mouth.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, she'll go, Otto, are you kidding me? And I'm sitting there thinking, there's only one person she said that from, or you're being super annoying. And it just comes out, and I think, help. She said the other day, she's like, I said this to you. She's like, Mommy, I just really need some straightness now.
So scary. But I imagine as parents, it must be so interesting to watch your child and see kind of what they're like behind closed doors and how they engage with other people.
Yeah, I never knew kids could be so evil until I watched the show.
They're also really sweet.
Oh, some of them are really nice, aren't they?
And they're sly, some of them as well. Like, they did this thing where they were playing, there was a competition and it was just like a quiz. And one of them, they're four, and he's like feeding the other team the wrong answers and then going back. Like, they have these tactics and like life tactics that, like, it's crazy.
It's
so manipulative. Yeah.
But it's so interesting, and also watching the psychologists and like how they analyse them and what they're picking up. I think it's a really good one.
Oh, we need to watch. Well, sort of on the subject of children, I actually don't think it's very good, but I feel like I need to talk about Motherland, because there are lots of mothers I know talking about Motherland. Has anyone watched it?
No.
So it's a comedy about navigating the trials and traumas of middle-class motherhood. And my friend said to me, she's like, you've got to watch it, it's really funny. And it started so well. It started, and it was basically me. It was a mother standing on the stairs at work with the school having rung her, said, you've forgotten your child's swimming kit. And she's like, fuck, I've forgotten the swimming kit. I think I've couriered Coco's swimming kit to school about three times.
No.
I am that mother. And what's even more annoying is I quite often will carry some bags for them, and I'll go into the school, and then I'll carry the bags back out, and I'll get home. By the time I get home, I then get a call from the school secretary, and she's like, oh, is that Coco's mother? And I'm like, shit, what have I forgotten?
My favourite was when the school called and said that you'd left Mouse with Otto. That was the best. Do you remember?
Yes, I did, that was nursery.
Oh my God,
the dog. I used to get to the nursery and tie the dog out. And I left the dog behind. Oh. Wishful thinking, maybe. Anyway, motherhood. They had a children's party. It's kind of, it's so nearly there, but it just misses some of the subtleties of really good English humour.
Yeah.
So I was a bit disappointed. And actually, I talked to another mum yesterday, and she said the same. She's like, I'm sticking with it because all my mum friends are talking about it. But
so it's actually, all acting. It's not
it's
real.
All acting.
And it's American. Okay. Is it American?
No, it's English. Oh. And it's written by the woman who wrote Catastrophe.
Okay.
Rachel,
I love that.
Karen.
Oh, yeah. Like that.
Who's
funny.
In it? Anyone famous?
Yes, anyway. You'd recognise that. The other thing I watched last night was Trump. An American Dream.
Oh, I really want to watch that.
I think it's a series. Well, I watched two last night together, and it's all about his life, sort of from right the beginning of his career. I didn't realise that his father was a big success story, and he basically took over his father's business. But it's fascinating about, I always get muddled between Ivana and Ivanka Trump. Who was the wife?
Ivana.
And what a force she was, and how she ran some of his businesses / hotels for him. And it got to a point, so she ran one of the casinos in Atlanta that he created, and he then bought the Plaza in New York. I didn't know he owned the Plaza. I didn't think he does anymore.
He was in Home Alone, remember?
Oh, yes.
He bounced into him in the lobby.
Really. Oh, okay, good knowledge. Well, he bought the Plaza for $400 million. It was basically an ego trip, and there's a bit where he's being interviewed just after he bought it, and the Jeremy says, why did you buy it? And he's like, because I can see it out of my window and I couldn't bear someone else having bought it, so I just had to buy it. And he was in so much debt because he was buying all this property. But he then took Ivana from Atlanta running this casino, which she did incredibly well, and she was very business-minded, and as I said, she was a real force. It's really impressive. And he put her into the Plaza, and she was such a success at the Plaza that she took him to a party that was put on kind of for her. And everyone was so desperate to speak to Ivana, and he hated it. And there was all this footage of him looking really angry about the fact that he was playing second fiddle to his wife. And from there, it kind of went downhill, and he had a mistress. He became a very permanent fixture. And it was really interesting.
That sounds really interesting.
There was a fact like circulating during the election that says that if he had just taken his father's money and had never, you know, kind of tried any business endeavours, he would be richer now than he currently is. Yeah, he only
really?
Lost money from the Trump empire.
Bankrupt,
yeah,
didn't he?
Three times.
Yeah,
and then he did something weird with some sketchy people.
Yeah.
Oh, so weird. There was also a point where he's building Trump Towers, and that's interesting on a few counts. One, because his father went to one of the developers and said, my son is quite led towards the mafia. Don't work with the mafia. Don't let him work with the mafia. You mustn't let him get into bed with them, and he's quite sort of impressed by them. So that I thought was really interesting.
He's now president of the United States.
The other one was the project manager, who was in it quite a lot, said that Trump Towers, apparently he stood up on TV and said, apparently Queen Elizabeth's going to buy one of these towers, and I've said to the press, no comment. So he was kind of making everything. And all these amazing hotshot stars were coming to buy one of these properties that he'd said were the most luxurious penthouses in the world.
Yeah.
And but he put in the cheapest wooden floor, and he put in plastic worktops. And actually, that's what no one knew, that he was doing such PR around it. And the other point was that apparently it's tradition that after you complete a massive building project, you have a party for the workers at the end. You have a big launch party and you invite press and whoever you do, and you invite all the workers. And apparently Trump was like, let's not have all the workers.
Classic Trump.
So it's really
it's horrifying.
Fascinating. And I'm also reading Hillary Clinton's autobiography.
And how is that? Because I would love to read it, but I also feel like it's just going to be a kind of load of media spin, and how honest will she ever be, really? If it feels honest, I don't know.
Well, I've always thought the same. I've always thought, and I've said this before on the podcast, so I'll say it, but I've always thought she was very tight-lipped.
Mm.
She's not.
Okay.
And she is very frank in what a horrific situation it was and is. And I'm only a quarter of the way through, but it's really interesting, and it's really digestible, and I was worried it was going to get quite dry and very political, and for me,
he's
not in that world,
doesn't
read the FT every day, I'm finding it really digestible and actually quite a page turner.
Yeah,
I think it's a really good book.
Interesting.
So actually, speaking of autobiographies, I went to buy it, but I had Audible credit, so I'm listening to it, Tina Brown's Vanity Fair diaries. So she kept a diary for like the full 20 years, from like 6 months before, or like a year before she started actually editing the magazine in New York, right through to like present day, I think. And they are fascinating. I mean, all three of you would absolutely love it.
Wow.
So interesting. So it kind of starts with the kind of, her leaving Tatler and going to the States, and there was quite a really long like flirtation period with Vanity Fair.
For people listening, tell us about Tina Brown.
Sorry, so Tina Brown, she's kind of well-renowned as one of the most eminent magazine editors kind of our day. Her and Anna Wintour kind of both moved to the States at the same time. She edited Tatler at 25, which makes me want to like stick a gun to my head. And so at 29, she was editing Vanity Fair, but it obviously starts, I'm only a bit of the way through, so I'm kind of at the stage where she's just starting to kind of revamp it. They basically, Condé Nast were going through a kind of real difficulty with it, because it was really hard to kind of make it stand out from Vogue, which was so successful. First of all, you'd find it so interesting, particularly because this is in the 80s, I think it's 83, 84, so obviously publishing is like a completely different world, and it's all about like the cover and the sales figures and circulation, and like it's just so alien to kind of what we're dealing with digitally. It's fascinating.
Yeah, such a different world.
Yeah, and second of all, it was such a man's world, and she was so impressive. She is somebody who hasn't kind of fallen prey to that kind of man's world thing, and she's quite a kind of strong, dominant woman, but actually it's really interesting as somebody in their 20s to read her kind of fears and, you know, trials and all the kind of difficulties in the build up to all of that. It's quite relatable, actually, surprisingly, which is quite inspiring, I think.
Is it juicy? Does she
so juicy.
Rosie wrote this brilliant roundup of the kind of juiciest tell-all books
in fashion. Mm-hmm. Georgie recommended Champagne Supernovas, which is a book about Kate Moss, Alexander McQueen and Marc Jacobs in the 90s, and basically all the terrible slash amazing things they got up to. And it was, I was absolutely shocked by that book. It was so juicy. I'm surprised there weren't a million lawsuits about it.
Well, quite clearly it all went on.
That's what I was thinking. But yeah, I really want to read this Vanity Fair book.
Yeah.
Have you read Champagne?
No, I'm getting there slowly.
Who's in the, you're reading at the moment?
Yeah, I have reading this copy, you can have one, I'm done.
There's a queue, there's a queue for this book in the office right
it
now.
It is just, I mean, the stuff about Kate Moss and her partying days and the group that she used to hang out with, it is absolutely gripping. I mean, you kind of can't really believe what went on in the 80s. I mean, it was that, it was just the kind of spirit of the moment, wasn't it? It was all kind of very grungy, very badly behaved.
And whose point of view is it from? Like, where are the facts coming
from? So it's a journalist, and I think she based it on interviews with their friends, countless magazine articles and things like that. She's quite a good journalist, written quite a few things. But I don't know if you've ever looked at celebrities' lives and felt, wow, I wish I could have that life. That book will make you completely go back.
I can't wait to read it.
Oh, it doesn't glamorise it.
It doesn't glamorise it. And all these, you know, you looked at them in the pictures and they're having this amazing time, but behind the scenes, it's just dark.
Yeah. They're basically really dark. Really fucked up. And not living the dream.
Not actually living the
dream. The other book that's really good is it called Front Row or Fro? The Anna Wintour book, I know what you mean. Which Anna Wintour tried to stop being published.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. That was in honest as well. Anyway, it was a good list of books. Definitely want to check out if you're at all fascinated in sort of what goes on behind the scenes.
It's so good. Also, on the topic of TV, did anyone watch Strictly on Saturday?
Yes. Oh my God, I'm going on Saturday.
Oh, that's me.
Yes.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Molly King, everything about that I was obsessed with.
Wait, I can't remember my
Oh my God, she did the Charleston in basically like a Victoria's Secret model outfit. She had wings, it was white, it was sparkly.
Coco was like, Mommy, she's got wings. She came.
I went through every single emotion with watching it. I was like, crying, I was clapping, I was sobbing, I was so excited. I literally was smiling from ear to ear. Just everything about that made me love.
She's just not that good.
The reason that I like Strictly is because of the outfits and like the energy that they all have. And she probably wasn't even that good, but I was just like captivated. And I was just like, I want to be her. That's the reason I want to be on Strictly. So I can dress up like that and do that routine and everything. I loved it.
Oh, I love it. I think Alexandra Burke is. I still haven't got over that. We haven't talked about this for a long time on the podcast, but Aston's gone.
Devastating. He was good. He was incredible. It was one of those, you know, unfortunate fluky weeks when, like, he wasn't like top of the leaderboard, but he wasn't bottom. So one of those like middle ground people who then inevitably end up in the dance off, and they just saved Molly over him. Well, it's a travesty.
Well, they did it because he's a real talent, and it would have been like, oh, he's obviously a dancer, so they thought we could get a dancer.
When they have those musicians, I think it is a bit unfair because they've obviously done dance.
Yeah, but if everyone was crap.
Yeah.
Then we wouldn't watch it. Yeah. Do you know, you need this.
You
need the talent. I agree with you, but you need the talent. I mean, although, I mean, you could say that, I think, Debbie to win.
But Debbie trained as a ballet dancer.
I know
it was a long time
ago,
but as in, like, she's not that old, you know. Do we think?
Stop
I don't
it.
Think they are, though.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
I don't think they
are.
I think you're just believing that
all the time. I think that's Daily Mail hype.
Well, no, I'm going to enjoy reading it.
Netflix?
I've been obsessed with Netflix this week. That's why I haven't watched any TV, because I've been binging on The Sinner. Have any of you seen it?
I've heard. You're like the fifth person to say that to me this week. Yeah.
Can
is it good?
Tell me about The Sinner, please, because I keep hearing it.
It's around. So it's a brand new series. It's kind of a thriller mystery thing. She is a married mum of one, seems quite happy, or they shouldn't have washed their hair in like 3 weeks, and she's a day at the beach and murders a stranger.
For no apparent reason.
No one has any idea why she did it, including herself. And then over the course of the episodes, you find out why she did it with her, kind of rediscovering things. One of the detectives, you know, she's about to go to prison for it, and one of the detectives is like, no, I think there's more to this. Like, even though she's confessed, there's more to this, and kind of delves deeper. And it's messed up. Like, I was shocked watching it. I screamed at parts.
Really?
It was really dark.
Have you finished it?
I finished it now.
How many?
8 episodes.
Because I read that plot that this woman murdered someone on a beach, and I thought it sounded silly, and then I moved on to looking for something else.
So it's based on a novel. It is slightly far-fetched, but I think you're so involved by the end that you just really want to know what happens, and maybe not 100% believable, but what really is.
But it's good.
It's really
good. And where's
it set? In America, somewhere. Okay. Don't remember where.
Good, I'm going to check that out. Mm. I like Jessica Biel.
It's lots of crying. My boyfriend said he's never seen someone cry so much in one TV series when we watched it together.
Is that you?
Every single... not me, no. God, I wasn't crying, I was screaming. No, Jessica Biel cries in pretty much every scene when I watched it. So,
I took my children to see Paddington 2.
That has had rave reviews. Was it good?
Oh my God, it was so good. I don't really like children's films. Yeah. I mean, Coco is so like me. I mean, she just cried the whole way through it. She just can't bear it. And Paddington goes to prison. She was sobbing next to me. I was like, darling, it's all right. They're going to get him out. And she just kept crying. And then as it got to the end, and it was obviously a happy ending, she was really sobbing. So I was like, darling, it's happy. She had these tears like streaming down her face.
Oh, good. Has she seen Bambi yet? Because
it's a killer.
No, not one to show her Bambi.
Is Hugh Grant good in it?
Yeah, he is actually.
Graham also is a career best for Hugh Grant.
He is. And he starts off playing a bit of a sort of pompous actor. And you think, oh, this is Hugh Grant. But then there's this scene where he takes on all these different personas in one. He's basically got all these sort of different, they're not mannequins, but he becomes, and he's jumping from one to the other, and he's sort of Poirot, and then he's a sort of street seller, and then he's something else. And he's jumping from, and I was like, God, I didn't know he had it in him.
He said it was really, really enjoyable to film. Yeah. He really liked it.
And they showed him all these different costumes, didn't they? Yeah.
He's got Joanna Lumley, Hugh Bonneville, amazing cast. It was really sweet. Yeah. Actually, my dad and stepmom went to see it on their own.
But I say it's quite
a bit weird, but they really enjoyed it. So there you go. Anyway, from what to watch to what to listen to, and for inspiring business advice or just fascinating insights into your favourite brands like Airbnb, Rent the Runway, Five Guys, Spanx, I could go on. There's a podcast called How I Built This with Guy Raz, and anyone who knows me will have probably heard me banging on about this podcast. Charlotte's smiling, she's talking about it. But it's absolutely brilliant / addictive, and it tells the stories behind some of the world's most famous companies. And each one's about 45 minutes long, and it's just really fascinating, from the founder of Airbnb saying he started Airbnb when he was living in a flat in, was it San Francisco? Or somewhere like that, and his landlord put the rent up, and he was like, shit, I don't know how I'm gonna be able to pay it. So he had a blow up bed. He knew there was a conference in town that had sold, and all the hotels in the area had sold out. So he had a blow up bed, blew it up, put it in the sitting room, had some random guy to stay in his flat. And he got into bed that night and thought, shit, I think I'm gonna have to lock my door. Locked his door, went to sleep, woke up the next morning, thought he might have nicked everything. Let's see, opened the door, went out. The guy hadn't nicked everything, he was still there, and they had a really nice breakfast together. And then the guy got back in touch with him about a month later and was like, I'm going to another conference, this time in Palm Springs, or whatever it was. The hotels have all sold out. Do you have anywhere you recommend? And anyway, it grew from there. There was then a big political rally around the time of an election, I can't remember which election it was. I think it was Obama's campaign, actually. And again, there were just never gonna be enough hotel beds for the amount of people going. And that was kind of when it really took off. And there's stories like that, stories from the founder of Spanx, Sarah Blakely, and how she built Spanx, how she sold it, how she came up with the idea, Rent the Runway, and they were knocking on Diane von Furstenberg's door. Anyway, it's the most brilliant series. In fact, I'm looking at you.
I think it's so fascinating. My boyfriend really liked it, and he told me about it, and then I passed it on to you. But I think it's so interesting because so many of these huge, huge companies that, you know, Instagram, like, you kind of can't remember what it was like before Instagram was just part of your day-to-day life now. It's crazy. But that was two guys who worked together. Originally, it was like, I think it was where you could go for a coffee, like, and with your friends, and it was like a coffee meeting app or something like that.
It was like a check-in thing.
Yeah, exactly, checking in. And then I think they were on holiday, and then they thought that the picture thing was really great, and then it was about filters, though, and how, like, you can make all of your pictures look really good. And it was just amazing just to see how literally an idea with two people can really grow. And it's really inspiring, and I think really interesting to see how these companies evolve.
Yeah,
I think from a kind of voyeuristic perspective, like, I have no interest in setting up a business, but I listened to the Whitney Wolf one, who founded Bumble after a kind of disastrous time at Tinder, and it's just fascinating. Yeah, so first, I think everybody's interested in how people become successful and how people make their money. To actually hear it from the horse's mouth is really
And the main thing I think it comes down to with all of them is them having the determination. I think anybody can have the idea and think, oh, this would be great, but it's actually they go through it and they persevere with it, and things are the difficulties along the way and hurdles, but they persevere and they get there. And
how they
really
do smart things and clever things, and how celebrities, there's a bit with the founder of Aiden and Anae, which is the sort of baby muslin company, and just how they use celebrity to completely transform their business. And the Five Guys one is really good as well.
I think it's so great.
It's brilliant listening, and I feel like I've kind of exhausted them. I think there are about 80 different episodes.
There's so many different episodes.
And I'm like getting to the end of the one. You know, there's something for everyone on there. There's Dermalogica, that's a fascinating one all about how they built that business. But I've exhausted the ones that you know, flip my switch, so I'm like, make more.
Yeah, doesn't they come out weekly? Is it not, or have they put on hiatus?
I've really binged on them, and it really, I always think the key for me is if something gets me out of bed to go to the gym early in the morning, like when my alarm goes off at 6:30 and it's dark, if I know I've got a really good podcast to listen to, then that totally gets me there, and this is definitely one of those. Once upon a Saturday afternoon, browsing the shops was just what you did, but then the internet came along and all that changed. Or did it? Is the high street dead? Charlotte and Rosie, you wrote a good for and against on this. Charlotte?
Yes, well, so Rosie and I decided to write this piece, and I don't think either of us felt that strongly about it before we did. Having written my side of the argument, which was anti-high street and pro-online shopping, I'm like completely convinced by my own argument. I feel I feel even more anti-high street than I did before.
I'm the same. I actually had to order some stuff online because it wasn't in the shop when I went there. And I've had the most disastrous week with returns and deliveries and everything that I never want to order online again. I'm pissed.
Lou, do you have an opinion?
I think there's a time and a place for both of them. I think high street shops, absolutely get them online. I couldn't think of anything worse than going into those sort of shops. But I think designer and the more concept stores absolutely has to be in store. And I think each brand almost just needs to think about their market. Like in New York, have you been to The Line, the apartment by The Line?
No. So cool.
Oh my God, it's
so
absolutely cool. Amazing. And basically they have turned a warehouse apartment into a store basically. And you walk in and there's a beautiful lounge, living room, kitchen, walk-in wardrobe, bedroom, bathroom, and the idea is that everything in there you can buy. So it's basically a really incredible curated life, essentially, that you would go into, and then the idea is that you would think, oh, I want to be this person, I want to live in this place, and
what does she do?
Exactly, and it's amazing just to kind of see how shopping has evolved into that sort of thing, and it's really kind of getting into more of that lifestyle element of it, which I absolutely love. When I went in that store, I thought, this is incredible.
Yeah, it's got to be about the experience.
Even when we were at Nasty Gal last week, they have this pop-up store on Carnaby Street, and it's not shoppable directly in store. They have like one of everything, and then they have iPads on the wall, and this is what they do in Reformation in LA as well.
They did that in their London pop-up.
Yeah, they did in their pop-up, exactly. And so you kind of try on whatever it is you want, and then if you want to go and buy it, you basically order it online on the iPad that's on the wall. And I completely agree with you. Like, the future of shopping is amazing when it comes down to trawling through your Zara.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I just cannot do it anymore.
I was listening to a podcast actually at the weekend with a panel of retailers, and actually they were saying the sort of lifetime of a store used to be sort of 5 years, and actually they think going forward it's going to be more like 3. Like, you've got to innovate that quickly. Yeah. You can't say this store's going to do me for this long anymore because things are changing so much. Going back to kind of high street, I mean, I'm with you. I think the idea of, it's so difficult, the idea of spending a day in high street stores just sort of makes me uncomfortable. Oh,
but to be honest, if I could go at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, then maybe I would like it. But when you work full time,
I often get to the weekend and think, I could really go with doing a bit of shopping.
Yeah.
And then I honestly think, maybe I'm just at that age now.
It's so stressful.
Or I've got children, and I want to spend time with them, and they're not kidding each other. But I actually think, I just don't have the energy.
No, I agree.
To do it. But then I also think, I sat down at my laptop the other day to do some shopping, and I put all this stuff in my basket, and I just couldn't bring myself to check out. I don't know what it was. That also felt like such an effort. Like, you've really got to focus on that, and you're kind of really aware that that might not fit. Is that the right?
I think a lot of it's how you're feeling at the time and like what the weather's like and who you're with. Like, I love when I go on holiday or go to like New York or Paris, like I would always go into the shops, and I love that whole process looking at, you know, what everyone's wearing, and that whole feeling is amazing. That's kind of really why I love shopping so much. But in London, high street.
Just awful. See, I know I did fight the case for the high street, but I do think that the majority of shops, especially on Oxford Street, and especially when you work 9 to 5 and have to go either after work or at the weekend, it's just an absolute nightmare. What I did learn, though, is the absolute worst way to go shopping is to order stuff online and pick it up in the store.
That is the worst.
The absolute worst thing you could ever do.
Did you go to Zara?
I did.
Yes. Did you go to Zara and Oxford Circus?
I actually was contemplating death. So then I had to queue to pick up my order, then I had to queue to try on, and then I had to queue to take half of it back. And it was really stressful, and I'm never doing it again.
I do like when you can order loads of stuff to your home, your office, try it on, and then you've got if you live near a store, that's quite easy.
You can take it back.
Or going really late at night. I mean, I haven't done it for a while, it's got to be said, but going to Westfield late, late night, and if you can face getting in your car, going to the car park, and actually, it's quite quiet at that time of night.
Yeah.
I've done that before, and
I agree.
I would rate that. Let's talk about Christmas ads. Can I just say, has Christmas not started a lot earlier
oh
this year?
Oh my god, so
early. I got an email from Nespaul Tea this morning offering me 25%
off. I know, me too.
Pre-sale. Oh, I mean, hello, it's not even December. It's not even nearly December. Yeah. Secondly, there are Christmas trees absolutely everywhere.
I feel like it was literally Halloween, and then the minute that was like, literally the next day, they just switched over to
I'm actually not complaining because I do love Christmas.
Yeah,
and I actually really don't mind. And I was like, let's crack open the mulled wine this weekend. But it feels really
I think
early.
It feels way too
early. Nearly December though.
But there's still like six full working weeks until Christmas. Not that I'm counting.
What's the date today? Like, 20, it's 10 days. We are only 2/3 of the way through November.
Yes.
So that's true.
As well,
20 days ago it was October. I mean, that's practically summer.
It's very overwhelming.
Anyway, Christmas ads. What's everyone's favourite Christmas ad?
Whatever, or like this year?
This year.
I've only seen the John Lewis one and the Coca-Cola advert, which is, I think...
What's the Coca-Cola one? Oh, like the Coca-Cola.
I think is really when Christmas begins.
Actually, the Toys R Us one came on last night as well, and I said to my boyfriend, like, oh, they do just crack this one out. Like,
Is it the same one?
Yeah.
Is that even allowed?
Yeah. Well, it's like Coca-Cola, isn't it? They're just like, this is cheaper.
Is it?
Didn't they put some CGI in that Coca-Cola one? They like.
Oh, they might have like spruced it up. Yeah, but it's the same. I very much.
It's the music, I think.
Well, the one that we always get the most excited about is the John Lewis ad. I couldn't believe how much it cost them to make that ad.
How much was it?
It's like $4 million.
They have a ridiculous budget.
It was crazy because they got the director from The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind to direct
It's just such a big deal, isn't it? Anyway, Mars, I quite like Mars. There's something about him. Sweet. He's sort of ugly cute, isn't he?
Yeah. What's your favourite advert of all time, Christmas advert?
It's got to be the old man.
Really?
Oh, that made me cry.
Oh my god, so depressing.
That was sad. Oh no, I love that.
I loved it.
That was, what was yours?
Mine was, I think it was John Lewis, maybe like 2012, and it was the little boy who was really excited for Christmas, and you think it's because he wants to open his presents, but it's actually because he wants to give his parents a present.
Oh yeah, that was cute.
That one gets me.
Oh yeah, sweet. That is sweet. Anyway, I actually think, having seen Paddington at the M&S, that is the best. I think they're onto something there. Let's talk about affordable skincare. Does anyone have any winners? Tor wrote this great piece about some of the most affordable skincare products, which is always welcomed, if you ask me. What are your best affordable beauty buys? Rosie.
So I actually bought one of the products recommended here after reading this, and I've been trying it out. It's the Skin Active Oil Infused Micellar Cleansing Water by Garnier. I've used their cleansing water and I've used the Bioderma before, and to be honest, I have quite sensitive eyes. I couldn't tell the difference between Bioderma and the Garnier one. Garnier is a lot cheaper than Bioderma. And this one has oil in. It's argan oil, which is non-comedogenic, which means it won't clog your pores. And I have acne, so I'm a bit scared about using oil. Used
you
it.
Acne.
Well, maybe that's the wrong word. I have really easily spot-prone skin, and if I were to use something that my skin hated, I would have a face of acne in like a week.
Really?
Yeah, so I have to be really careful. This stuff is absolutely great. My skin feels really, really soft. I feel like it's helped heal some old scars from spots I've had. Really, I'm loving it so far.
So what do you do if you suffer from bad skin, which is from where I'm sitting now, I would not be able to tell. How do you treat it in your old age?
I just have to be very, very careful about what I put on my face. Anytime I try a new product, I will have to read through all the ingredients, kind of Google everything to make sure it's nothing that's going to clog your pores. And then apart from that, I'm fine. There are loads of oils that don't clog your pores.
So is that for you, is oil the biggest catalyst for bad skin?
I guess, yeah.
For an outbreak.
Coconut oil, for example, is like a number 5 on the scale. So if I put that on, my whole skin will break out. Or products that are too harsh as well. A lot of products designed for spot-prone skin can be really harsh. They can strip your skin, and then the kind of barrier gets damaged, and then any bacteria that are on your skin will just make it so much worse. So no, don't ever use anything.
And do you have anything that you recommend, like if you get bad spots, that really fights it well?
Biologique Recherche, their P50. It's the absolute best thing I've ever put on my face. It's a acid toner. You can only buy it in Liberty's, I think, and it's just genius.
Really?
Yeah.
Good to know. Lou, what about you?
So I really struggle to spend a lot of money on skincare because I always think, depending on your face, it's going to be different.
What, mentally?
Everyone.
You just can't get your head around
it. I just like
it.
When I read these things and it's like £180 for a serum, I think, well, how am I not going to know if it works until I probably finish the bottle, and then it might not have, and I can't get my head around it, basically. And I also think
there's... And you could be buying a white-free browse.
Exactly. And I also think there is so much out there that I think a lot of it is probably very similar, and it's just different packaging.
Yeah.
So I really like all the Avène. All of that stuff. Their moisture mask, I think it's like £12, and literally I'll just put that on at night. The next morning, I feel like I've got whole new skin. I absolutely love it. The Ordinary, I really like. And that's so affordable.
Yeah,
and I think when you see how affordable that is, I don't understand why some of these other brands are charging through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely a fan of The Ordinary.
Love it. And E45, I love.
It's so greasy though.
But as a body moisturiser, I find that's the only thing that I would use on my skin. Absolutely love it.
Charlotte?
Oh God, I have to say, I'm the total opposite. I'm not very good. I feel like if you really know what you're doing when it comes to beauty, then you kind of know what you're looking for on the cheap side, whereas I more tend to invest because I feel like, well, I don't really know, so at least it's going to be good quality. I wouldn't wear cheap makeup either. I'm scared to put something that I don't really know what it is on my face. I completely agree with you. I do not spend £180 on serums, but I stick to like Clarins and Cliniques and those kind of brands that I just feel safe with as a non-big consumer.
Fair enough. I really rate M&S their skincare. I think there's some real substance behind their products. They're not as cheap as some, but they're sort of around the £20 mark, some of them. I think they're brilliant. And the other brand that I'm a huge fan of is Aderma, which wasn't on this list, but they do some amazing products. You can buy them on Amazon, they're really cheap. There's an exfoliant, it's sort of green and white, and it's £12, and it is the best moisturizer ever. And I think that's definitely worth a look. So it doesn't all have to be expensive. On the subject of beauty, let's talk about mobile health and beauty services, because there is now a whole host of at-home services on offer for time-poor Londoners. And I was really fascinated to see some of these things. I mean, you can now have Botox at home. You can have a vitamin IV drip. Love that. And you're really hungover and you can't get out of bed.
Yeah, dental hygienists.
I
cannot believe
you have a smear test. It's a kit. Yeah, I saw it as well and I was like, no way. And then if you look, it's like something you can order and do it yourself.
Oh, fine.
It's £95, the gynae check home test. But if you're somebody, and there are women, we've talked about smear tests, and if you ask me, you've got to man the hell up and go and have one. Because just you wait till you have a child. But there are some people who really are absolutely terrified of that kind of thing. And you've got to have that kind of thing checked. So if you are that person and can justify £95, personally, I'd rather go to my GP and have it for free. But I think it's really interesting that you can do that.
I agree.
Anyway, obviously, all the usual things like massages, PT sessions, blood tests. The point is, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know, yes, Botox, all those things, smear tests. But I mean, it's going to be fascinating, I think, how the whole GP system changes and how much is going to be done virtually and how much more cost effective that's going to be.
Because there are so many things.
It's really interesting.
There are so many things you don't need to see a doctor for.
Yeah. So many
that
things.
You could just need a prescription. You need them to sign off on something.
I actually often call now my GP and I say, can I get a doctor to call me? And actually I find it's very rare. If it's a child, they're a bit more cautious and they say, can you bring them in? But so often now they'll just do it over the phone and that's just so much more.
It makes so much more sense because who can take a morning off work?
Exactly.
Changing topic, I wanted to talk about the interior design exhibition you don't want to miss. I'm actually going, but I feel like by the time I go, it's going to be nearly finished. So for anyone listening, hopefully this will come in use because there is an interior design exhibition called Holiday House, which is essentially two huge North London houses which have been developed by a property developer that he has cleverly got. They are for sale for a vast amount of money, but he has cleverly got 28 interior designers to design a room each in the house, and you can book a ticket, go along, and the ticket prices go to charity. It's a really proven concept in the States, but it sort of ticks lots of boxes and it's for charity. It's great exposure for all these interior designers and it's a really nice day out. And hopefully he will sell these houses because everyone's talking about them. But I think it's brilliant.
Mm. I think it's really cool. My only concern as a buyer of the house, not as somebody just going to look at it, would be surely every room is going to look really different. Like, if you hire an interior designer, it's because you want some kind of, you know, theme or uniformity. Yeah. And I can imagine these people having completely different
styles. The idea is that they can... We were talking to Turner Pocock. Mm-hmm. They were at one of our events recently and we love their interior design. But you're so right. It's Turner Pocock who's... style is quite eclectic and colourful, and then there's Sophie Patterson doing they've done a bedroom, and then there's Sophie Patterson doing the kitchen, and she's quite sort of
sophisticated, and pale, calm,
quite a soft colour palette. Mm-hmm. So she's done the kitchen, but I think Bunny from Turner Pocock was saying that They will put everything back, but equally, if you want to buy bits, bits, you can. And actually, the structure, so all the floors were wooden.
Yeah.
Okay, the covered doors and the wardrobes were there, they covered them and they changed the handles. Okay. Fine. Yeah. But I think it can all go
back. I think it would be so interesting if you were looking to sort of do something to your house or you're looking to buy somewhere new and get that inspiration and think, oh, okay, I really like this part of this room and that part of that room.
You need to go.
I know. I need to get some tips.
Sorry. Yeah, you do. I don't know. I'm going with a friend and we're going to go for lunch and we're both going to take the day off work. And
oh, we're so good.
Girl, and I just think so cool. I've seen quite a lot of pictures on Instagram. I've had to stop myself looking at the hashtag holiday house because there's a lot on there. But I love that Sophie Patterson in this week's episode of Sherlock's Live, so some of the team went to film her house and she was telling them that she's a real control freak, with as you would be if you're an interior designer, and she likes all her cushions sort of perfectly plumped and her throws in exactly the right place. And she's like, she's seeing all these pictures on Instagram and her cushions are slightly out of place. And she's like, oh my God, I'm sort of getting a tick because my cushions aren't.
Well, I think it's really cool you can actually shop it. I mean, maybe not when you're actually there, but all of the furniture and the decorations that are in the rooms, they're from brands that you can actually buy. So if you like a sofa, you can go and buy it from a brand.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of better than looking on Pinterest at all these rooms and trying to find the stuff yourself. If you really fall in love with something, or if you fall in love with a certain paint colour, you can find out exactly what paint colour is, which is good.
One of my favourite rooms that I've seen is like a teenage girl's bedroom, and it's bright pink, sort of bright pink velvet studded headboard.
Oh my God.
With lots of gold and sort of fluffy sheepskin, and it's just like every girl's
dream.
Let's talk about quirky ways to celebrate a milestone birthday, because whether it's your 21st, your 30th, your 50th, your 60th, you kind of want to do something that you're going to remember. And I thought this was a really inspiring piece. There are a few things I've kind of got on my radar that I said to you to sort of put in here. Anyway, I thought this was a really inspiring piece. It's my husband's big birthday next year. I'm now thinking we might take a tattoo artist to Ibiza with us.
I think that was my favourite one, when Kate Moss had her Glastonbury theme 40th and she had this big field, and in the field there was one tent. I think it was a caravan.
That was our idea.
So it was, oh, really?
I'm sure I suggested it. I didn't realise.
Oh, you must have heard it somewhere.
So she had a caravan in this field where all of her friends were going. There was a tattoo artist in there just giving everyone matching tattoos, which is
cool. I basically want a tattoo, so I think I'm just going to get one along and take everyone down. So when I'm like 65, really regretting it, I'll say that there are 25 other
you're
people.
You're all in the same boat.
I've got a big birthday coming up in January, and I want to get a tattoo for that as well. So,
what else was there on here? I loved the meet in Margate. I love the idea that you can just do something really fun and memorable and it doesn't have to be really expensive.
No.
I like the idea that you just get everyone to meet at the station and give them all a train ticket and you all go somewhere and have a picnic on the beach, or I don't know, I just don't think it has to be the big expensive one.
I love the idea of the house party as well, like the grown-up version of that, because there's so many fun, like, different catering styles you can have these days, or like cool pop-up bars, and like, again, it doesn't have to cost the earth, but there are so many fun ways to like bring the party to you.
Yeah, I actually went to a really fun 40th a couple of weeks ago, and they did play it down. It was really cool, but they had a marquee. I mean, it's a London, it's not a massive garden, but they had a marquee attached to the back of the house, which they tented. It was kind of navy blue with like sparkly lights in the ceiling, and then they had a couple of barmen making awesome cocktails, and then they had a sort of sushi bar, I guess, in the middle of their kitchen with three Japanese chefs making sushi all night, which was really cool because you could just help yourself all night. It was really theatrical, so it really added to the party.
That's amazing.
And you didn't need lots of waiting staff as well, so you just had the chefs and everyone went up and helped themselves.
Yeah.
It was a really, really good party. And what were the other good things? Plan a scavenger hunt. We've done that for a Christmas party before. It's quite fun.
None of us were here, but we have all heard about the legendary scavenger hunt Christmas party.
Well, you're probably being facetious, but actually...
No, I mean it, I have. They all talk, trust me, they all talk about it a lot.
It is actually really fun, and you can buy... There's a website called Treasure Days, and for £35 you download a PDF of different areas of London. So we did one in Chelsea and one in the city, and it's got the route that you take, pubs that you stop off on the way, things you have to collect on the way. You have to get a business card with SW6 and the thing you have to get. And then there are funny things like collect a bit of blue ribbon or have a photo taken with a supermodel. So we thought we were clever because we found a big ad. And anyway, it's really fun.
My team gets quite competitive.
Obviously my team won both years. And you will meet in the pub afterwards and do a big score. It's really fun. And so cheap. And what else was there? God, go on the Orient Express. I think it's just the movie making me want to do it.
Yes.
I would love to do that.
Is that the one that goes from Victoria?
Yeah.
Because I always see
Victoria.
Yeah, because I go to Frame and you have to go past that to go through it. And on, I think it was on Friday, I saw them all getting ready and they were all really dressed up and like clinking their champagne and stuff.
What, are you actually get dressed up to
Really dressed up.
Yeah, you can wear like 20s.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's tall. I think it's real.
It's fancy dress, 20s.
Yeah, but sort of flapper. I think that's quite cool.
Everyone,
it's not for me. But okay, each to their own.
You just stick to your final skirt. What would you do for a big birthday? Lou, would you have a big party?
No. I don't like being centre of attention. I find it really awkward. So I'm going on holiday for my big birthday.
Let's finish on fast food, because we all know that opting for fast food shouldn't be a daily occurrence. But when we do, if we do, it could pay to avoid certain items on the menu. So there were some pretty shocking things on this list.
So this was inspired after it was in all the
headlines. Did you write this?
I wrote this after seeing there were so many headlines about how multiple ex-McDonald's employees had claimed that the fillet of fish burgers were left sitting around for hours and hours unless you made one cooked to order, which
but
is
what,
quite
But
gross.
Why only the fillet of fish?
Because it's
no one wants
because you're less likely to get it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Who's going to order a fillet of fish?
Me. No.
Are you?
Until I read this piece. No. I think it's because they're less common, so they'll kind of make a few when one person orders one and then they'll get left sitting around. But the thing that shocked me the most out of all of this is the ice. So the Daily Mail of Mail on Sunday went round and they tested the self-serve drinks machines with the ice at Nando's, Burger King, McDonald's, KFC, and all of those places were found to have ice with bacteria levels not only over the health and safety guidelines, but more than in their toilets.
Yeah.
In
that,
that same
restaurant. It's unfathomable. I cannot get my head around that.
Because also, that's why I would not go to Nando's.
No, but see, that's the thing. I would like. I look at this list. I'm like, McDonald's, no, KFC, no. But like when I was at uni, I used to get ice drinks at Nando's all the time. That's like a dinner out.
I see. I like McDonald's. I really like McDonald's. I've
drank ice from McDonald's though, loads of times.
And then do you think like if you were fine then? Like
oh yeah, like it's always this thing.
Yeah.
Could you explain to me the Starbucks secret menu? What is a Starbucks secret menu?
So you know like BuzzFeed roundups where they tell you about like you know, those like all these kind of like things that you should know, right? So there's been loads of those, right, about like Starbucks drinks that don't exist like on the menu, but if you but you can kind of discover them on BuzzFeed or wherever and then you order them and then they'll make them for you. So they're and they're supposed to be really cool. So things like what do they say here? Snickerdoodle and Nutella Frappuccino, and they're like, you know, super hyped versions of their existing drinks. But this was saying you shouldn't actually order them because they're not like regulated basically by Starbucks. So you're just getting whatever the guy behind the counter makes.
So the guy
for you.
In Starbucks basically have people come in and be like, I want to order the Nutella Frappuccino, but he's like, it doesn't exist, and they're like, no. I know it exists. I've read it exists. And he's like, I literally have no idea what to do. So people were going to make it up. And they just, a lot of the time, I think in England, they'll look at you like you're a crazy person.
I watched a video on the weekend and it was Jamie Oliver with all these little kids and they was talking about chicken nuggets. And basically he showed them how they made chicken nuggets and it was like skin, bone, offcuts, which they put into a blitzer, blitz it all up. And then he like puts breadcrumbs on it and fries it. And then he goes to all the children, how many of you would still eat this? All of them put their hand up.
It's disgusting.
It's so disgusting.
What is that?
It's so disgusting.
It's from his show like a while ago. Yeah. Like, yeah, I remember that. It was like when he was first trying to do the food revolution.
Oh my God, and literally his face is just like...
Oh, and there's a bit of whistles that you just shunt. Yeah, nice. The other things on this list were tacos at Chipotle, because apparently you get half less than the regular portions. That makes sense. Bacon cheeseburgers at Five Guys. And the last one was the gravy. Oh. At KFC. Apparently it's made from the revolting oil that stores up at the bottom of the cookers over the day, and then it's served to their customers.
So one of my friends loves KFC gravy so much, she calls KFC KFG, because the G stands for gravy.
And apparently they're really proud of their gravy.
Oh.
So.
They are.
Gross.
Here we go. I won't be going to KFC. So that's it for this week. If you have any feedback, then do email podcast@sheerlux.com. And if you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. See you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.